Hold on there.
Hello.
Hi. Don't go away.
Okay.
The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Blah blah blah. Wait, hey, guys, come in. Oh, the blah blah blah.
That's right.
You goddamn right, it's right.
That's right.
You goddamn right, it's right. I know what I'll do. I'll go out and rob everybody blind and go to Argentina because nobody ever thought of this before. Guys, come in. Oh, the blah blah blah. Guys, come in. Oh, the blah blah blah.
That's right.
You goddamn right, it's right.
What do you do?
What can you do?
What can you do?
Guys, come in. Oh, the blah 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 blah.
I don't care where I'm going, just as long as I'm with you. Put it there, pal. Put it there. I'll be just like your horses, and I'll stick to you like glue. Put it there, pal. Put it there. I'm glad you're fooling Pepsodent.
Oh, that happy snow.
Stealing all that cash. I hear your show on Thursday.
Nice, huh?
What a lot of eggs you smash.
Well, at least I don't depend upon Colonna's big mustache.
Oh, he gave me the brush.
You're faithful and you're fair. Put it there.
Skin me that. Skin me.
You've got that something in your voice so right for selling cheese.
Hustle a lot of this stuff.
Put it there, pal. Put it there.
Put that back in the bowl.
You know, I think your jokes are great.
Really?
It's just that folks are hard to please.
They're just snobs, that all.
Put it there, pal. Put it there.
Your face could make a fortune. Just your nose should make a lot.
How do you siphon?
I like the way you wear those gaudy-colored shirts you've got. Boy, the only time a rainbow ever covered up a pot. You're such a perfect square.
Oh, is that on the paper there?
Let me see the square. Big crowd.
Shall we dance?
Sorry, I have my heavy underwear on.
Oh, just to watch around to the adrenaline, huh?
Well, okay, if I lead. My colleague.
My crony.
My cohort.
My friend.
Companions.
Confederates.
Chums to the end.
Like meat and potatoes.
Or salt and tomatoes.
Boy, what a blend. Don't put it in the paper.
Don't worry about me.
Don't put it on the air.
I'll finish.
Don't put it in your pipe. Put it there.
Okay, here we go.
Listening to Frank Tolo.
That's Mr. Toll over there. You know what I mean?
All right. Postmodernists, you sunburnt sicklemen of August weary. Here we go. It's the Savino Cotolo Chronicles. Savino already on deck. Swinging his bat around. We're here for the next two count 'em hours. Stuff here, okay. Wake Up It's Night, everybody. Tom Savino, of course, with me on this Y2K Plus 13. June of the 13th. What is it? June of the 13th? We all on the Hallelujah Trail. Replenish your precious bodily fluids as we go along. Plenty of stuff to talk about. It might even get a little serious. That's a warning. That's a warning. Ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello, where I kind of wish I was right now, but I'm not. It's me, the man whose name adorns the title of the show, and the other man whose name adorns part of the title of the show, Mr. Thomas Savino, directly from an undisclosed location somewhere.
An undisclosed location, yes.
Somewhere west.
And after tonight's show, it's good that it's undisclosed. Closed, yeah.
Really? Well, because you got all this dirt, you got all this stuff, right?
I got all the dirt.
Oh, man.
All the biggies.
No, we get the time to do this stuff. Let me go through a bunch of little junk here first, and then we'll go through it. It's very simple, my friends, my comrades, my compatriots, my fellow humans. As we move along, I want to get one thing out of the way, though. I don't want to start the show off with a Paul or anything terrible, but I must address this right now and then let it go, because for the last 2 weeks I was telling you about the dire condition of our companion alternative radio broadcaster and producer, Mr. Rick Busby, who is fighting for his life in a local hospital here in Pennsylvania. And I am sad to report that he lost that fight a couple of days ago. And Rick, who there'll very few people to be as supportive of alternative broadcasting, certainly this show. I have no idea. I can't even put together the amount of thanks I have for this guy for being coming to us and taking the show and bringing it out to so many other people. And I just want to wish condolences. What do? You send condolences, right? You send them. Mm. You know,
yeah.
Send condolences to everybody out there. I will be at the memorial, and tell everyone I will be at the memorial service on the 30th of June. So that will be official. Not that, you know, Rick would say, well, don't forget to bring autographed pictures. Okay. But I'm not going to know. No, we'll be there. And with a lot of the friends and the people, and I'm going to help out, do whatever I can with Final Frontier Radio and Chris Malpass and the whole gang over there, who have been so incredibly supportive of the show. And I've been on their shows and wonderful stuff. And, it's really sad. You know, I always think, Tom, something, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about this the other day, and it was, you know, it's kind of black humor, but I have this, you know, this phone book that I've had forever. It's a book where I put phone numbers. It's not a phone book. It's a book. It's a, you know, some, and
directory.
Yes, yeah, one of those, you know, little black books that. And I noticed the other day, this is like really sad in every respect, but I noticed that I didn't cross out names of people who have. Past. I just put a big D there. And as if that does something like, you know, if you cross them out, it's kind of like what, you know, you don't want to forget them. Every once in a while, you'd open up the book and you'd remember the person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm saying to myself, well, you know, there's way too many D's in this book.
Wow.
One of the sad things about outliving so many people, although, you know, let's face it, we'd all rather be the outlivers than the outlived, I guess. But Rick was sick a very long time, and I'm amazed. And it takes a certain kind of guy to have fought as hard as he did, and to stayed. I mean, I don't even know if I could have done it, But and I don't want
to. Sorry to hear that. Yeah. Of course, I didn't know him, but he seems to have been a big part of the show and a supporter, and I'm sad to hear about that.
Let's, for one second, though we've been doing this anyway, let's do Rick as he, and I didn't even ask, this is the kind of guy Rick was and how supportive he was for me in the show. He just came to me when this came out, and he did this. So let's do this, and we will continue to do this in memory of Rick, and then we'll come right back.
In a world where reading is dying out, a new champion emerges. Wacky escapades. Parallel universes.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Frank Cotolo.
There's never a dull moment as Frank weaves a tale of a writer making you laugh, chuckle, and learn a bit about life. Pick up License to Scale by Frank Cotolo, now on Amazon for your Kindle.
No, it's not self-serving. I mean, because I'm going to play the thing anyway and try sell some books. Mm-hmm. But Rick was Rick. But so there you go.
So that was Rick. Obviously.
That was Rick. That was Rick Busby. Oh. 39 oh. And
39.
Yeah, that's another thing, you know. Whew. But here we are. Oh. And in the spirit of everybody gets in front of mics, and certainly Tom and I have gotten in front of our share of mics through the years, and here we are. I was thinking about you not because of Bugliosi. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Yeah, Vincent Bugliosi.
Vincent Bugliosi.
Bugliosi, which is why I labeled when I realized he was Italian. Is Italian. Mm. That's why I titled, headlined the blog, Three's a Mob, because there would be Savino and Cotolo talking about Bugliosi. And I guess two or more, or more than two is a mob? It's more than two. What is the definition of a mob?
You know, I don't know. Huh? I mean, in terms of a collective number, I don't know. Of course, the other definition of a mob is a... Forget about it.
Well, in terms of a collective number, I like that. I'm going to put that on my list. That's the name of my new book, by the way. In terms of a collective number. By Frank Cotolo. But Tom came, comes here once a month, thank goodness. We had a bunch of weeks of... Last week, I actually did a show by myself. I'm really happy that people still enjoy the shows that I do by myself. I don't mean that to slight people who like Tom, who comes on because Tom, adds to the show, and the great guests that I have are all fine too. But there is something, I guess, from people who've listened to this show for a long time, and they really like this, that a lot. So thanks a lot. And to answer some of your emails right now, as I said, I will be doing more solo shows as soon as I get more medication. In the beginning, Tom, when I started doing this in the beginning, and everyone was convinced, and I wasn't. I was not on drugs. I was not on any meds or anything. But everyone was convinced that I was on something.
Really?
Yeah, based on the fact that I talked for 2 hours, see? And no one could do that.
Gene Shepherd did that, right? Yeah. How long was his show?
Well, the overnight show was 6 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, at night.
6 hours.
Yeah, it's new, midnight to six. But anyway, enough about me. Let's move on here. We got a lot to talk about because Tom has chosen the subject. And I mentioned Vincent Bugliosi. Did I say it right again?
Bugliosi.
That's right. It's a boog, not a big.
Bugliosi.
It's a Bugliosi. I saw Donnie Brasco again the other day. Boy, one of these days I have to stop watching that movie.
Why?
I don't know.
Some movies I just watch over and over.
Right? Can you not just turn on, The Shawshank Redemption from the middle and just watch? Right?
Man, I can, I no matter where I catch the Shawshank Redemption, I have to watch it to the end. I love that movie.
I always say when people
Someone says to me, like, where are you going, Frank? I always say the same thing. I'm going to see my friend Andy. You don't know what I'm talking about. Too influenced.
Andy Dufresne.
Yeah, he remembers his last name. That's terrific. I wouldn't remember certain details. But, yeah, and I don't know why. It's like, you know, I'm sitting, I have nothing on. I get all these stations, and I'm going, oh, look, Donnie Brasco's on again, you know. But Bugliosi.
Yes.
For those people who don't know Bugliosi, I'll tell you how I know him. And I didn't read this book. Tom, and I'm like Stephen Colbert. I refused to read books before the interview. No, I didn't get a chance to read this book. I haven't read it. And it's good too, though. Lots of times I don't read the books because I want to act fresh when authors or people are talking about them.
Yeah.
But I do know of this guy because of the very famous is it Charles Manson case?
Yes. He was the prosecuting attorney, the DA or assistant DA, that prosecuted Charles Manson.
Now, a lot of people out there might think that Charles Manson, it was easy. Just like they just got him and said, hey, you know, you're a crazy, wacky killer and you're a dumb, you know, you think dumb things. And but it was difficult to nail this guy. And Bugliosi, as I recall the Helter Skelter story and why it's called Helter Skelter, was brilliant to suddenly think like he did and to get Manson to actually admit his psychosis by claiming that the Beatles had recorded a song on one of their albums that told them to start a revolution. and it wasn't revolution.
It was Helter Skelter.
Yeah, what a brilliant defense. So I knew of him through that. Oh, there's a... What's that?
Sorry about that.
Is that your alarm?
No, that's our house phone.
Oh, okay. It's okay. You can let my people...
We are in an undisclosed location. Did I say house? There's a phone.
he meant underground structure. But...
Yeah,
but that's how I know him. But you know him from this. When did he write? What's the name of the book? Just tell us a little bit. Tell us the book, where you found it, and what the heck.
The name of the book is "The Betrayal of America: How the Supreme Court Undermined the Constitution and Chose Our President." And this, of course, is all about the 2000 election, Bush versus Gore. Supreme Court decision.
And it's not, he didn't say the 2000th election. He said the 2000 election.
The 2000 election, yeah. The election of the year 2000.
For those of you who don't remember, and let's face it, a lot of people have forgotten this.
Yeah.
But Gore, who was the vice president, won the popular vote, correct? And
that's correct.
And Bush won by court decision, won the electoral votes.
That's correct. Now, Bugliosi's position, and I'm glad you were talking about the Manson thing, because he is a criminal attorney, Bugliosi, and one of his, one perspective he brings out in the book, Betrayal of America, is that he knows the criminal mind. And that's part of what he accuses the five conservative justices of the Supreme Court as being treasonous, as betraying their oath to be impartial, to be impartial and fair. And he says they weren't, that they handed the election George Bush.
Now, so this is a claim that these guys were not objective, and they're supposed to be, right? They're supposed, and yet, how is it that we say these guys are supposed to be objective, guys and gals now?
Yes.
And yet, we know that there are ones that lean to the left and ones that lean to the right. So how do we, how could you be objective if we know, like a conservative president? Bush, how many did Bush put in? since when he was president? Two, three guys?
I think he appointed two, I think. One of the, Sandra Day O'Connor was one of the justices that Bugliosi accuses of being treasonous and handing the presidency over to Bush. She said, she was quoted by a Wall Street Journal reporter who heard her say this. She said, if a Democrat wins the presidency, I want to stay around. She had planned retirement. She said, I'm not going to retire if a Democrat wins because I want the Republican president to appoint the Republican justice.
Wait,
so she had.
You didn't quote her on
one
that.
Of the five.
I got a little confused there. Wait. You didn't quote her on that, did you? Because I was a little confused there. She said what? What did she say?
She said, I want to retire, but I don't want to retire if a Democrat wins this presidential election of 2000, because I don't want to be replaced by a Democratic president because they're going to appoint a Democratic, they're going to appoint a Democrat to the Supreme Court, and I don't want that.
So how does that make her treasonous? But she didn't know. Did she know at the time? Did she know at the time that she was going to have a say in it? Because or did she say that before the problem?
Well, before that, she said that before the problem, and she was just hoping that Bush won. But as things played out, and the vote in Florida kept going back and forth. Then she and the other four conservative justices kind of took things in their own hand and said, "Well, we can actually call this election because of the way things were playing out."
Now, I don't know a lot of this stuff. You've always been better at American history than me, Mr. Wigata. Proved that by giving you better marks. But how? Doesn't the Constitution of the United States or some document somewhere say that we adhere to? Doesn't it say that a president, to be elected president, you must get a lot of more electoral votes, correct?
Yes.
And this has happened before, hasn't it? Was it?
Where a president gets more popular votes and doesn't get the electoral votes?
Yeah, did it ever happen?
Yeah, I think that's happened prior to the Bush election. Yeah.
Okay, so,
I think so.
My question is, when they did the final count in Florida,
yes,
without looking at anything, any conspiracy things or anything, they did find that Bush won the popular vote in Florida. Therefore, he got those votes, so therefore he was president because he had more electoral votes. So bear with me. Why did this go to the Supreme Court?
Well, first of all, what you're saying, excuse me, the final counting of the votes, I think you're saying that the final tally, if you look at it, showed Bush the winner anyway. Is that what you're saying? In Florida?
Yeah, he won, and that was enough to put him over the top electorally.
Okay, you have to understand that these five justices did this way before any counting was done. In fact, it was their decision to halt the counting. So they didn't know what the final outcome was going to be. And many people say, and a lot of people feel, oh, what the hell's the difference? He would have won anyway. But what the Supreme Court did was actually they handed the election over to Bush.
So they said, stop counting. This doesn't matter. I mean, and I want to know exactly because I don't remember. I was here. I was there. But I don't remember exactly. And according to Bugliosi, who you're using as a reference, what does he say? What did they do? They just sat back and they went, look, forget about the counting. Bush wins and that's it. I mean, what exactly happened that made this so blatant or didn't make it blatant? That's pretty blatant. I mean, a bunch of people stand up and look, we're the Supreme Court and we say Bush wins, so that's it. That's not how it happened. No.
According to Bugliosi, that is pretty much what happened. unfortunately, we don't know that much about the legal in and outs of it. The common people.
But what did they say? I mean, what did they say that satisfied their argument?
Okay, first of all, the Florida Supreme Court was on. They were on top of this, and they had decided. No, we're going to count all the votes. And when that happened, the Bush team went to the Supreme Court in early December and said, we want a stay of this count, stop the counting because, and they used constitutional amendment, the 14th Amendment, the saying, It might infringe on equal fairness.
Equal fairness. I like that. I like that phrase. As opposed to unequal fairness.
As opposed to unequal fairness. No, equal. What the heck? Come on. Where's my research here?
What would impose?
I have notes here. So
okay, what would impose? They said if you don't stop the counting.
The Florida Supreme Court said
no. And why would we call them a Supreme Court if there's a Supreme Court? Because you can't. They can't be a Supreme Court if there's one Supreme Court. The state Supreme Court should be under courts or something, shouldn't they?
Okay, wait. I'm sorry. I just thought of the phrase equal protection under the law.
Equal protection. That's the 14th Amendment?
Yes. So Bush said, this is going to infringe on my equal protection if they keep counting. now here's the absurdity of this. And this is what Bugliosi gets really pissed at this. Rightfully so. Bush's appeal to the Supreme Court was, you've got to stop their counting because I may lose. And that's not fair to me, That's not going to be fair to me. You got to stop the. Okay.
Well, what about Gore though?
I'm certainly simplifying it.
Yeah, but what about Gore though? Before he conceded, he had lawyers and stuff too, and they said, no, we're going to count, right? That's what started the going to a court decision, right? The fact that Bush said, look, I won, and he said, no, you didn't. Right? Yeah. So his lawyer, and he didn't concede.
Actually, Gore went first saying, hey, wait a minute, there's a lot of these uncounted votes and undervotes. You remember the third person on the ticket was Pat Buchanan.
Pat Buchanan
his own independent.
Oh, did he go independent that year? I don't remember. Oh, yes, he did.
Yeah, he was. Huh? And okay. And what happened in certain counties in Florida, people, he even admitted it. Pat Buchanan admitted it. He said, some of these voting forms, the so-called butterfly forms, people inadvertently voted for me, he said, because when they really wanted to vote for Gore, if you look at the form, it's very confusing. They wanted to vote for Gore, but I got the vote. He admitted it, and it made no difference to him because he
But wasn't that's still, that would still be his opinion, though. He can't speak. He can't get into the brains of people who voted for Buchanan. I mean, I know it's confusing, but he had to make a case of that. He would have to prove that every one of those people voted for Gore, or Gore would have to prove it, correct?
Yes.
Well, why didn't they just go get the people?
But you have to. This all came about because there were many people were complaining before Buchanan even admitted this. Many people complained and said, "Hey, wait, I didn't even realize it, but because of this form, I voted for Buchanan, but I wanted to vote for Gore." And if you, it was very confusing.
How did the people? How do people know? How did they know they voted for Buchanan and they wanted to vote for Gore? Because I mean, how did they find out they made that mistake so immediately?
Well, there's in the book there's an anecdote of one chiropractor in Florida who was conversing with a bunch of his friends in a diner, and they were all complaining that they inadvertently voted for Buchanan instead of Gore. And he first was thinking, well, these stupid guys, I mean, how do they do that? You know, I would do. And then he realized as the conversation went on that he did too. He inadvertently voted for Buchanan instead of Gore. So many people realized this, that in this one county, that the nobody's contending that the form was purposely graphically designed to throw people off, but it did throw people off. And those, you know, people weren't getting their vote heard because they intended to vote for someone who, you know, they voted for someone who they didn't intend to vote for. And that's not the right vote. So the Florida Supreme Court said, well, we have to take that into consideration. And then in the other counties where they had those, the Chad situation, the famous Chads, if you remember the, and for those of you who don't remember, a Chad is just a little piece of cardboard that hangs as you, if you have one of those voting ballots that you have to punch through. If you don't punch it all the way through, the chads are either hanging or they didn't go all the way through, or it doesn't look like a clear vote. So it was a famous photography of that time, are shots of people, inspectors in Florida looking at ballots in the ceiling light to see, you know, if this is an accurate vote, who was the vote for, and so on and so forth.
I think there's probably a lot of people out there who don't know about that particular form of application, because I have no idea if that's used anywhere anymore. Where you poke, can you think of anything where you poke a hole that's perforated? And what the piece of cardboard that is supposed to come out might hang. That's the Chad. And now Chad. I don't know why it's called a Chad.
A Chad. I don't either.
But
that was a famous word. If you say Chad to someone who was around in 2000, we'll immediately know what you're talking about. It's like grassy knoll.
Grassy knoll. Yeah, what a great phrase. That's almost, that grassy knoll was a phrase, though, before. What was that one your student came up with about the helicopter again?
Oh, stuttering whoosh.
Stuttering whoosh. Yeah, I didn't write that one down. Stuttering whoosh.
Stuttering whoosh.
Stuttering whoosh. W-O-O-S-H. That's a helicopter blade sound, right?
Yeah,
that's a great, that's a great,
that's a great description.
So, but a dangling or hanging Chad.
Yeah.
Was, and I think it's amazing that anybody knew at that time that that was called the Chad. Who would have known? And now we, listen, we grew up, and God knows how many times we used that particular form of perforation in a test or in something or other, who knows, getting a driver's license or something, correct? How many times have we grew up that? And nobody, but nobody ever said to me, make sure that Chad is completely off when you poke it. Nobody ever called it a Chad. Suddenly it was a Chad. I know this is really probably the least important thing about the story, but these things really eat me alive. Why wasn't I told from an early age that was a Chad?
Watch your Chads.
That was a Chad. Nobody told me.
I didn't know that either.
No,
until
we grew up. Nobody ever said to us, this is a Chad. Okay, back to the core of it. So, where.
Let me
go wherever you were going with that.
I was going to. The ballot that was confusing is called the butterfly ballot. That's not a Chad ballot. But it was graphically designed to look like you were voting for Gore when you're actually voting for Buchanan. Now, there were 3,000 out of the 3,400 of those ballots where people claimed there were 3,400 people who said, hey, I really meant to vote for somebody else. Well, 3,000 of them were intended votes for Gore, but they went to Buchanan. Just those alone, just those 3,000 alone would have given the election to Gore. And then there were the 19,235 double-punched votes, those are the Chad things, for Gore and Buchanan. They were simply labeled invalid. They just threw out 19,235 double-punched votes, you know. And those votes we're talking about were for Gore and Buchanan, or Gore or Buchanan. Certainly, at least half of those would have gone to Gore, certainly.
Now, all this is presenting itself after because the Supreme Court stopped it, right? It stopped the counting. Now, you're talking about, so the Supreme Court stopped the counting, but they kept counting afterwards? They said, oh, let's count anyway, or what?
Here's what happened. Since the Florida Supreme Court decided, yes, continue the count, that's when Bush and his people went to the Supreme Court and said, hey, you have to stop this because I won't get equal protection under the law because if they keep counting, I may lose. And that wouldn't be equal. You know, that wouldn't be fair.
Now, is that what he says happened? That's what Bush's attorney said? That doesn't sound very, like, you know, that's not like legalese. Legal, that's not legalese. Now, hold on a second. Your Honor,
please. I didn't lose.
Your Honor, please, if we continue this trial, I'm going to lose. Can we stop it right here? Or can we strike everything? Can we strike everything that's against me from the record? What? I mean, what? What did the lawyers say? I wish I remember. I don't know if I ever remember. You know what? People didn't want to. It was so bogged down with the legalese. That's why I'm asking. The people were like, oh, come on, just get it over with, you know, one way or another. And eventually that's what Gore said.
Unfortunately, that is, you know, people really got sick of the whole thing. And, you know, so they, well, The Bush people went to the Supreme Court, and they denied the stay in early December. But the voting kept going. I mean, the counting kept going. And as the counting went on, Gore got closer and closer to being the winner. So Bush went again to the Supreme Court, and they denied it again. Then they went a third time on December the 12th. And by December the 12th, the pattern was so clear that it was going towards Gore. This is what Bugliosi said. That was the day of decision when the five justices said, hey, we got to do something to stop this. So they granted the stay. That's when they said, yes, we have to stop this, stop the counting. So they stopped on December the 12th. And they said
Bush is president.
They had to come up with something that sounded like legal. And this is where Bugliosi just goes berserk with what they decided. All right. Mm-hmm. So, well, first let me just tell you about what Scalia, on December the 12th, when they said, yes, let's take this case and we will grant the stay and say, stop counting. Even for that, they had to come up with some reason. And this is what Scalia said. This is Scalia's son.
Another Italian.
Yeah.
They're all over the place.
Justice Scalia from Brooklyn.
Another Italian from Brooklyn, see? Four is a mom.
He said,
go ahead.
In trying, this is from Bugliosi's book, with the haste of a criminal, Justice Scalia, in trying to justify the court's shutting down of the vote counting, wrote, unbelievably, that counting these votes would, quote, threaten irreparable harm to the petitioner, Bush, by casting a cloud upon what he claims to be the legitimacy of his election. In other words, although the election had not been decided, the absolutely incredible Scalia was presupposing that Bush had won the election, indeed had a right to win it. And it's like ridiculous. It's like saying, yes, we have to stop because he may lose if we keep counting.
It's okay. Okay. Now, okay. All right. So we know the order of circumstances, how, and we know what happened. And then these guys now they're at the point where Vince, what do we call him? Vince? I keep Bugliosi.
Vincent, but many people call him Vince.
Okay, let's not deal with Vince. Let's just call him Vince from now on. Vince, we're at the point where Vince is, you know, to accuse someone of treason, he's a lawyer. I mean, so he means, but by saying that, and I'm not a lawyer, nor do I play one on TV, nor do I care. The last time I played a lawyer was on Mason Dixon, the Perry Mason, the Perry Mason that you and I did many years ago.
Yes.
But they wouldn't someone have to prove that I'm really bogged up in my own head here now. I'm trying to figure this out. What I'm trying to say is that you said, don't they have to prove that if someone betrays the country, to call someone treasonous, you have to show, I would guess, some willing, conscious attempt to betray the country. So think about this. Mm-hmm. Someone would have had to prove that if you voted for George Bush, you were contributing to betraying the country by having this candidate who a regular party, one of the two parties, have nominated and had presidents before. In fact, the incumbent was, oh no, the incumbent wasn't. That was Clinton. Okay, but how could Gore or anyone else have proven, or Bugliosi, let's just talk about Vince. Mm-hmm. What does he say? Does he say anything in that book about the fact that if he accuses the Supreme Court members of saying we want Bush, so we're going to say Bush is the president?
Yeah, that's pretty much
that's what he says, right?
The thesis of the book, yeah.
Okay, so but how can he claim that they would be treasonous by choosing someone who was legally running? I mean, does that mean everybody who voted for Bush, regardless of where would be guilty of treason by association? In other words, he wasn't an illegal candidate. He was a legal candidate.
He's saying it's treasonous because...
Because why?
Because we, the people, are supposed to pick the president, not the Supreme Court. This is another circumstantial evidence against the five justices who voted to give it to Bush. And that's this. Scalia and Rehnquist, they were 99% of the time they did not even hear cases that they felt, no, that's up for a state to determine. They were heavily, and still are heavily, state rights people. The state should oversee this, not the Supreme Court. The federal government should have nothing to do with this. Yet, in this case, they jumped for the chance to make a decision. It's totally against what they've always said.
Yeah, but I'm not saying they didn't want him. I mean, let's even assume they wanted him, and that's the guy we want because that's whatever, because we're conservative, and he blah, 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 blah. But if I was going to be Vince, I sit down and I write a book, I'm going to call these guys treasonous because they're betraying. What are they betraying? Because they want one president. A lot of people wanted that guy president. That's why they voted for him. And so where's the treason?
Well, here's the thing, and this is what affects me a lot. And that is, and he brings this up in the book too. You know, we believe, a lot of us believe that the Supreme Court is beyond politics. You know, they're supposed to be beyond politics. Many of us trust that they would make decisions, you know, even if it's not their personal view or something, that they're going to base it on the law and not their, you know, their personal opinion.
Yeah, but their opinions are interpretive, and if their mindset is conservative, then they interpret it one way. And that's why you have a vote, because correct?
So yes.
It's always political. How can we believe it's not political?
That's a good point. But you know, I was just thinking, like, recently this I think it's Roberts.
Yes.
Who did he replace? I don't know who he replaced. He replaced O'Connor, I think. I don't know. He's a Republican,
and he's the one with the Obamacare that everybody that says, yeah. That yeah, Glenn Beck was, is Glenn Beck is now trying to say that that the Obama administration used the FBI or the NSA or the LSD or something in order to make this guy vote that way.
Oh, is that?
It's a new conspiracy one. Yeah,
I can see that happening.
But his decision, and that was shocked everybody because they brought Obamacare up. Right.
I was really surprised, especially after the 2000 decision, which, you know, if you were to read this book, you'd say, "Oh my God, I can't," you know. And let me ask you this, Frank.
What?
This guy Bugliosi, he's a lawyer. He still is a lawyer. He's, you know, calling these five justices treasonous. And he has no repercussions. What I'm saying is, I think he has evidence that they were treasonous.
Well, that's what I was trying to understand, like how he could call them treasonous if he can't prove that they betrayed the country by... They didn't betray the country, which he treason. Maybe this is just semantics. Because does he say anywhere in the book that they got together, that he thinks or he has evidence they got together? These are the ones who were responsible.
You mean the five?
Yeah. Did they get together in a smoky room somewhere? Or maybe it wasn't smoky. Maybe it was too cold or too warm. And they sat together and they said, all right, we got to get Bush. I mean, you talk about a conspiracy like that, then you're talking about some kind of rebellion that's undermining the power of the Supreme Court. But what does he say? Was it just?
Well, you know, he does call this a judicial coup d'etat. A judicial coup d'etat.
Well, then he's inferring that mm-hmm. they did this in league with each other.
Yes.
Okay.
At least the five of them did. Now let's go to the other side. The liberal justices, the four of them, because the decision was 5-4.
So the four who voted against it. They didn't want Bush to be president. So that they're like guilty on the other side because they're not being fair.
Well, you know, right? I mean, a person can say that. A good part of this book is no matter what, you know, you will sell out your values if it's for your intention. You know what I was thinking, Frank? What really came out in this book, it reminded me of a sports situation. You remember we were Yankee fans.
Mm-hmm.
And remember the Reggie Jackson incident where he swayed his hip into the into the ball that was being thrown to first base and therefore knocked it out of play, and he was able to advance.
That's it.
And if you look at the replay.
Now I remember that. Yes, I do. I would never remember it, but yeah, okay.
If you look at the replays, he did that.
Yeah.
He actually, you know, he didn't move his feet, but he swayed his hip into the path of the ball and he was able to advance.
And that never went to the Supreme Court.
But you know what?
What?
As a Yankee fan, see, here's the thing. As a Yankee fan,
you say, good for you.
Hey, he didn't do anything wrong. You know, the umpires were there. They said, no, he didn't do anything wrong. Let's just let it go. You see the replays. If you're really objective and you're not a Yankee fan, you're just an objective, totally objective. Yeah, that was not right, what he did. He should have been called out. But as Yankee fans, it's like, ah, great, go, man, go for it. Right. That's fine. No problem. And the, part of Bugliosi is saying, as a culture, it's like, well, whatever, you know, if our side wins, however we win, that's fine. No problem. So, you know, he's saying it does bother him, though, that Republicans that he respects, not one said, oh, you have a point about the this being a bad decision. Not one said that. They just said, well, you know, it's a decision. It's a done deal. Let's just forget it and move on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it bothers him because he said if the shoe were on the other foot, he would be upset. Even if his guy won, he would be upset if the Supreme Court did what they did. If they did it, you know, for personal self-interest. He says, in fact, if I could read just the paragraph here.
Mm-hmm.
If one is wondering if, in the event the shoe were on the other foot, Democrats would be responding the same way, my answer is that I believe they would, though not to such a great degree. My assessment, at least to those on the margins of both parties, is that although there is a fanaticism among both groups, it is greater on the far right than the far left. And the far right, unquestionably, is much more mean-spirited. And, of course, we know from poll after poll that Republicans are more unlikely to cross over to the Democratic side for any candidate or issue than Democrats are to the Republican side. And we know, because this book was written in 2001, but in recent polls, that shows the same thing. Republicans are not, you know, it's a lot worse.
Sure.
Go ahead.
No, I'm saying it is a lot more intense and worse than it's ever been. In our lifetime, at least, the discrepancies, the lack of
compromise.
No, not compromise is the word I'm looking for. There.
Cooperation.
Yeah, compromise. Sure it is, because the right has gotten more intense and more right. They've gotten and I don't know if the left has changed much at all, man. I don't know. These rams hitting each other heads are has been going on forever in this country, and it's there's a couple of things here. Wait. Mm-hmm. Go say what you were going to say. So he said, look, it's more apt because, but of course he's going to say that because he's a liberal.
Well, actually,
I'm not taking sides here. I'm just saying, like, aren't they both really going to stand up for their own? I mean, if it was the other way around, I don't know what would have happened, but but Gore, and this is it. Why did Gore give in?
Well,
why didn't he take it to the altar, Supreme? Where do you go after this?
Bugliosi does have some harsh words for Gore's legal people, because Bugliosi had a bunch of arguments that he would have presented about this equal protection under the law crap, because it just doesn't play out. Look, just let me say what the liberal justices said, because they did not agree with the five other justices, and they wrote dissenting opinions, and they said, hey, look, you guys are saying that because of the different standards in different counties of Florida, there cannot be any equality because of the different standards. So why don't we, as the Supreme Court, say, go back to the counting, but make specific standard guidelines in each county when you're recounting. Make it standard. Then it will follow the equal protection thing. So the five justices' answer to that was, oh, but you know what? We don't have time. That's the other thing that drove Bugliosi crazy. They tell Gore to stop counting. They tell the Florida to stop counting.
Because the inauguration is coming up, right?
And they said, you know what?
It's January.
You know what? We're going to hit a deadline, so there's not enough time. So that's it.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, whatever the numbers are right now, that's the end. That's another thing. See, we just took it, and the media just took it like, oh, yeah, well, it's a deadline. And Bugliosi says, you know how many times in all sorts of situations in court, there are deadlines that and say, you know what, there's a circumstance where we need to extend this deadline. And all the time they're extending mm-hmm. deadlines. Mm-hmm. They could have easily extended a deadline for the most important issue possible, but they didn't. Those five justices said, no, there's not enough time, so we're just going to have to end it here. That's it.
This is Savino Cotolo Chronicles here this day of the 13th of June. It's the, I think it's the 50th, no, it's the 30th anniversary of something. It doesn't have to do with this, I don't know why that just struck me, since I watched Scott Pelley. I always watch Scott Pelley, CBS Evening News. And at the end of the CBS Evening News, I think I have the invitation down now. I say with him along when I say he's closing. And I'm saying this for a reason. I'm not saying this to get off the subject, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I watch the news, and they do all the stuff. A lot of news tonight, too. The Supreme Court was in the news, too, tonight. They said you can't patent jeans. And yes. I don't mean like Jordache. Human genes can't be patented. I have no idea why anybody would take that to the Supreme Court. And as far as I'm concerned, I tell everybody this. I say, you know, last night, they ran it again. I think this is one of the most important movies. If anybody wants to, anybody in America wants to look at America and the justice system or whatever we want to call this affair, you have to watch The People versus Larry Flynt. This is like one of the most important movies, and Larry Flynt is one of the most unheralded freedom of speech fighters that ever, okay? And that's
is that the Woody Harrelson?
Yes, yes. And I'm not even – that the Supreme Court in that case, of course, was – I mean, he won. Larry Flynt, who created garbage and published it. And I mean, he really he took that all the way, and that's like a very, very important thing to happen in our time. So the Supreme Court they went around that one, and certainly they had their moral views certainly transcend whatever goes on in the words of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So in that conservative way, so we're not saying here. So, I mean, Bugliosi's not saying he's saying that in this particular case, and weren't a lot of those guys on that Larry Flynt Supreme Court? I think Scalia, a lot of those guys were there. So, weren't they a lot of the same guys?
Well, Scalia's been there since the Reagan days.
Yeah. So,
I don't know.
Okay, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to just do this quick break. And we can all go, should we take a pee or should we just, I'm asking the audience. Audience, should we take a pee? I'm just going to tell you right now, where is this, we're at the top of the hour. And we're talking about this, we're discussing this book, The Betrayal of America by Vincent Bugliosi. Is he, he's what does he do now? Just writes books?
Well, he does largely write books. Right after this, he wrote a two-volume study of the Kennedy assassination.
Wow, he's getting into this stuff.
And
he
totally shoots down all those conspiracy theories.
Can you use a different phrase when you?
What do you mean?
They shoots down.
Oh yeah. Bad choice of words. Considering the
it's called Rumble on the Grassy Knoll by Vince Bugliosi.
He wrote
two volumes of that. You know, here's why I was saying this before about watching Scott Pelley, because I saw all this stuff that was going on in the news, and it's big news that's happening through today. A lot of big news, and the Supreme Court's getting a lot of attention these days for all sorts of stuff, but I think that people, I think I'm one of these people. I mean, I sit back and I can understand it. We can intellectualize this. We can talk about this. We talk about it then. I voted for Gore. And I mean, we all the stuff that we did. And then, you know, you've got to, then you got some work to do because you got to make a living, or then you got to make a sandwich because you got to eat, and then you got to take a shower, or you got to attend to something. And these things happen; they continue to happen. But I think that and what is he? He's writing these books. So what good is this doing anybody? I mean, now here we are, 12 to 13 years later, talking about a president is no longer standing; he's gone. I mean, whatever he did, it's done. Okay? And not only is it gone, but, you know, the greater part of the, I mean, his party is in such deep trouble because they don't understand how times are changing. And, I mean, everything is changed already. And we're sitting here talking about this. Why should anybody care? Why is this so intense? Why are you finding this so intense still?
Well, I still find it intense because we just believe illusions, you know. We believe illusions.
So in other words, if
we go on about our business, I understand that this is way after the fact, and like, who's going to feel passionate about this now, and so on.
Is that what this is about? It's about believing illusions. It's about
it's like, oh, okay, well, that's what they said, and you know, but. It's in a way, it's a coup. I mean, it is a coup. We are been living. It's a false presidency. The 8 years of a, I mean, separate from what you think of George W. Bush, the presidency was a phony. It was handed to him. You know, it wasn't an honest elected by the people presidency.
And okay, and this is also when does this stuff, all of this stuff, become moot? Did they? I personally think, from what I know, that there was a lot of chicanery and a lot of things went on, and in terms of killing both of the Kennedys, it just all stands to reason. But if you can't, you know, you can't find the exact person. Remember. And Mario Puzo knew this too, because he, in The Godfather, when he said, when Michael says, look, if history has taught us anything, is that you could kill anyone. And you know as well as I do that the underground, at least in those days, was able to there's no way to trace a hitman to anyone. So my point is, so somewhere along the line, perhaps a president and a man who would have been president were murdered. And we'll never know. That happened, and that's the end of that. So what does Bugliosi sitting around writing about the Kennedy assassination now, or when he did after this, or writing about this, what do we learn from this? What does this mean now?
Well, don't forget now, this book was written in 2001.
Okay, correct. Yeah, I know. But you're making this an issue right now based on what the general should what you let's get to the core of this. What should we believe? What we don't believe? What's real? What does the Constitution mean? What's the core of this thing?
I think we need to the core for me is we need to see what's really going on.
How?
And let me tell you the personal thing.
Yeah.
About betrayal. I'm as guilty as the next guy for believing what isn't real. I was so upset about a month ago when Obama signed this farm bill that on page 73 of the bill gives Monsanto all protect. No one could ever sue Monsanto.
He's Italian too, isn't he?
If it's found that genetically modified food is harmful, we can't sue Monsanto. And he just signed it like nothing.
Okay.
And it's like I believe that this man is like out for the common guy, for the little guy. It's bullshit. He's not. You know, I was believing some fantasy. We believe these fantasies. I think we need to wake up. You know, we need to wake up.
So in other words, does this when a student comes to you and says that Carla said. I don't know. I mean, you know, real and unreal. I don't know what we're really talking about here. Because I mean, if we do wake up, what do we believe? Why should we believe what we believe? You know, I'm amazed at and I've gotten into some. I don't get into arguments about these things anymore because people use their beliefs to construct their something themselves because they have to identify with something. I don't know why they even do that. I mean, they have to justify their existence, or they have to do whatever it is. But even today, I turned off. No, it was last night. It doesn't matter if it's day or night. But there was, you know, talk radio was on again. Have you heard Andy Dean?
No.
Andy Dean is a guy who worked with Donald Trump, and now he has a young kid, and he's got his own radio thing, and all the radio's all conservative. I told you last time, five stations playing Rush Limbaugh in the same market. It's like, who's listening? Who are these people? And I'm going, this is all such, it's all so moot because it's a talk. You write a book, you write the book, and there's people like you. So that's terrific. But what? What can you do? Can I do? Or you're saying don't believe in anything anymore, or don't follow through on this, or everybody's going to let you down? What's the lesson here? Is what? Are we all too naive? Because I can't identify with anybody anymore, especially politically.
Well, I think you mentioned that Godfather quote before, you know. And that's, you know, who's naive now, Kay?
Right.
And I think that we are. I think we are guilty collectively of being too naive and wanting things to be the way they're not.
I agree with that.
And really
totally.
Falling victim to saying, you know, it's okay. Everything's okay. This is good. It's fine.
I totally agree with that, and I think that's I think that you just goes across the board. If you listen to at least the last year or 2 years of anything George Carlin did on stage, you hear all this stuff, and we laugh about it because he gives it to you in a comedic way, but he was sending an incredible message, which neither party wanted to. Party, I just say two sides. Are there even three sides now? Are the Ron Paul and the other guy and his son there? Is that another side, or is that a deeper side of the other side? Or how many sides do we have here now?
I don't know. It's becoming multifaceted.
I watched that guy on television, and I'm like, is this age? Is this just age, Tom? Because I watch the guy, and I'm going, okay, I understand what he's saying, and blah blah blah. And that's his, and blah blah blah, and blah blah blah. He's saying whatever he's saying. And boy, he has the stupidest. Why does he do something about his hair? And you know, yeah. And as petty as that sounds, it suddenly rings to me as something like, you know what, that's might be just as important as anything he's talking about. Because, and here's what I really hate. Hate is a good word, too, because it is hate. Here's what I hate about all of it. It's so predictable. If something happens in the news, turn on Sean Hannity. Why? I know what he's going to say.
Yeah.
And Glenn Beck, at least Glenn Beck comes up with some really weird ones. You know, and you can laugh at it while he's being serious. You know, every tomorrow's show, we're going to take down the entire administration. And tomorrow comes, they sell gold or whatever it is they sell, fake food that, you know, because, and then the next day comes and nothing ever happens. It's hilarious. You know, he never got out of it. He's a morning zoo guy and he'll always be a morning zoo guy. But it's like, it's predictable. We know what these guys, we know what we're going to hear on Fox News, don't we?
Yeah.
And we know Rachel Maddow is not going to get on the air.
And MSN, you know, I listen to MSN and every now and then, you know, it's like, why am I listening? Yeah. I know what they're going to say. I know what they're going to do, you know. So I'm cutting down on that. It's like, it's all a bunch of bullshit. I mean, it's just a bunch of bullshit.
Jim, my point is that when it becomes so predictable, it's really hard to trust what people are actually thinking because they're collective thinking. I always wondered, does a memo go out in the morning? Man, all these guys are going to be on these news shows and they're all going to say, is it possible that all of these people think the same thing? I mean, how is that even possible?
Yeah. I mean, I you know, to use Fox News as an example, over a course of 2 days, you will hear different commentators. They'll use the same phrase. I mean, they must have got a memo.
They're going to
say this about that. Yeah.
So when it comes to the Supreme Court, like I said in the beginning, here a guy where we want to believe that they're going to look at the Constitution and say this, that, and the other thing. Yeah. And then there, but we know that the guy on one side who appointed this person is appointing this person because they're going to interpret something more towards their view of liberal or the other one, view of conservative. So we know. We know immediately it's political. Isn't that political?
Yeah.
None of these guys aren't going to sit. Scalia's suddenly not going to sit down. Now, wait a second. Here's where I think it works. It works, and that's why I brought up Larry Flynt. It works because in that particular case, that went to the Supreme Court because what's his name who died? The evangelist guy that he mocked, which brought this whole thing to the surface. Now, I forgot his name. Who was that portly guy? Who used to be on anyway? I forgot his name.
Is this part of the Larry Flynt thing?
Yeah. How it went to the Supreme Court? This freedom of speech. The point is that this was a bunch of very conservative people who were saying, some people would consider that a liberal judgment, but they said that you can. You can make fun of someone in the public eye. You can say anything you want about someone in the public eye. And the more ludicrous it turns out to be, it is comedy because no one believes it. So if you say that it wasn't Pat Robertson, it was someone else. I can't even remember. I can't believe I don't remember his name. There was an ad in a Hustler magazine that this guy, this reverend, come on, you know him. He dropped dead on his desk. He was a big guy, and he was always, I don't know. Okay. I can't remember. But anyway, they said that he had sex with his mother. And it was a joke and everything like that. And it was just, and they said, well, here's a conservative bunch of judges saying, hey, you could say that because it's so ridiculous that everyone laughs at it. And, I mean, if you take it serious, you're not looking at the format and the forum. I'm looking at the forum. Look at this magazine. It's total trash. And the idea is you can't take it down because you think it's crappy, because that's a personal judgment. You have the right to do it and publish it and say it. You can't just take it away because it's crap. Now, if that were the case, then we would have, it's like the conservative guys who said, if we pass Obamacare, there's going to be seven doctors saying you live and you die. I mean, like, how can I believe this? And people are out there believing it because what you're saying is absolutely, I agree with totally. They want to just pigeonhole all this stuff and feel like I'm on this side and that's it and that's that, and it's stupid. I don't know how, it's just stupid. And I think what really is ruling this whole thing is stupidity. And Vince talks about what happened there, and it's almost like you're saying that. I'm going, so what's so weird about this? In the long run, so they elected a president. Because you know what? In the long run, that didn't mean the end of the country anyway. So, I mean, nothing happened. The system kind of works through these kinks,
doesn't it? What
happened
was they stole a presidency. You know,
what did they do with it? A lot of good it did them. What did they do with it? They didn't do anything grandiose. Now that we have the president in our pocket, we'll take over India and we'll take away. What did they do? They didn't do anything.
Well, I mean, Bugliosi is saying that in and of itself is
treason.
The worst thing.
Well, who was going to take this? Who would take the Supreme Court members to court? I mean,
He's mentioned that in the book. There's no ramifications. They just totally they use their power. Or there's a reference in the book about who wrote this? Gary Spence. He's a law writer. He writes about law. He's saying that in this country, law is the same as religions. Lawyers and judges are the same as priests and popes, at least in relation to dogma. Mm-hmm. Like religious dogma, law claims ultimate authority, and power becomes power itself with a capital P. And then he's saying that the Supreme Court is power itself. Mm-hmm. And they misuse this power, there's no consequences for them, except, you know, we trust them. We trust them.
Well, that's
and
all
they
stuff.
They just betrayed our trust because they weren't fair.
Because,
I mean, honestly, whether you're conservative or not or what, wouldn't the fair thing have been, and I'll say, you know, the fair thing would have been to let Gore win? No, the fair thing would be to count all the votes.
Right.
That's the fair thing.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And whether you're Republican or Democrat, I mean, I'm registered. You know, I was registered as an independent for a while. But then I realized I couldn't vote in primaries, and I like to write in people. So I'm a big writer.
Who are some of the people you've written in?
Well, you would know them. I mean, there's some people in this area that I write in, and then and there's some of the people that I even though I have only one vote, I have a tremendous feeling that I shouldn't let. I feel bad if I just have this guilt. But you know what? But there's a lot of people in local politics, you know, who don't run against anyone. So, and I got to tell you this. I don't know if I ever told you this. I might have said this on the show before some other time. I had a vote, write-in vote for, it was the county, it wasn't an examiner. It was it had something to do with taxes. I don't know. It wasn't an accountant or anything like that. But anyway, the guy was running and nobody was running with him, against him, right?
Okay.
So I told my friends, and I had no idea this was going to be so ignored, this particular position, but it had to be, you had to vote this person in. They said, I said, well, let's just write my name in because the one guy should not run. Two guys should run. A girl or a guy. There's two people should be on the tickets. Why is one guy run? So we did it. Well, here's what happened. I won.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you. I won because
Okay.
So few people cared about this particular position or anything. Right? So I got a call from the board of school, well, whoever it is, school board, you know, and. Uh-huh. And they said to me, they said, well, you know, now that you won, we have to get together and we have to get together and we have to, you know, put you in office and do this. And I said, now, hold on a second. I said to them, I said, I intend to do exactly what I said. I intend to keep my campaign promise. And they said, okay. And they're going like, you know, like they ever saw a campaign. I didn't run a campaign. So they said, well, okay, what do you mean? I said, well, I said in my campaign, I said, if elected, I will not serve. And they, you know, they looked at me like I was nuts. And this is a nutty thing to do. But in fact, I got a jolt out of it. Because I think I, at least I made a statement somewhere down the line that story means something or nothing or just makes somebody laugh. But that was the point. So I don't, I mean, I am a voter. I'm not a person. I'm not one of these people who just turn, but the big picture is so big and out of control. I just don't have any idea what to do. I don't have any time in my life to care about it. And I think a lot of people are, I don't know if a lot of people are like that, because they keep conservative radio alive and they call up and I don't know. I just don't know, Tom. So out of touch with the things that you're dealing with this. I couldn't even, I like Bugliosi and I enjoyed Helter Skelter. I like that whole idea, but I don't know if I could eat. I couldn't get through 20 pages of this book because I'm just sitting there. I'm going like, well, I don't know. I know it sounds stupid. I know I sound lame, but that's what it's come to. I don't know what to do. Monsanto? Oh no! What do I do? Do I not? Okay, if I'll stop buying Monsanto, is what the products I got to look, and then what? Or am I supposed to take a chunk of my life? Am I supposed
Monsanto? You can't. You have no recourse whatsoever. If you eat corn, soy.
Yeah,
canola.
Right. Yeah,
and what you are eating genetically modified food.
But am
you I? Know, I mean, my if I want to stand for something or try to do something, I would like to just see them label it like they do in Europe. You know,
yes.
I want to know if I'm eating genetically modified food, but they put billions into shooting down propositions that would require labels that say this is GMO. And here's the thing. They say, well, it would unnecessarily put fear in consumers. Hey, I got news for you, man. I already have the fear. Mm-hmm. I don't want genetically modified food. I already have that fear. I want you to tell me if there's genetically modified food here. But they shoot it down and they have so many tens of billions of dollars and thousands of lawyers. You can't.
And you don't have one representative who's going to help. Who's going to help you push that into change that? Do you? Do you know of anybody?
There are some
who say they would.
Senators
who say they will
in Oregon, and they're pushing for this. But they too are like small, excuse the expression, potatoes, probably genetically modified. They're small potatoes compared to the people who are, in my opinion, just on the take. Yeah, I think it's a corrupt system.
Yeah, it is a corrupt system. How does it work at all? How does it work at all? It's amazing. And you're listening here with Tom Savino from an undisclosed location. We can't say where he's right now, or they might come and get him. As it is, the NSA is listening right now. You know that thing too. Really, that thing really made me laugh too. It's
you know that guy Snowden. Is that his name?
Yes. Yeah.
The guy, the whistleblower. I think he has an air about him. You know, you talk about Ron Paul's hair or something. Is that a name, Ron Paul? The other guy?
No, Thandpaul, Sandpaul, Drand.
He's got Randpaul. Well, this guy, the Snowden guy, he's got something in the air about him. Like, he's just, I think he did this, like, to be famous or something, you know?
Well, you know, whatever he did, and however, and you know, that's another good thing. That's another weird thing, which is of course true about, you know, people's impressions. People use their own impressions, I think, probably above even beliefs. So we know that with all the minorities that are, and I heard this on Scott Pelley tonight. He said that pretty soon I love this. I couldn't even figure this one out. How did they get away with saying things like this? He said, very soon, there will be more minorities in this country. More than half of the people will be minorities. Well, then they won't be minorities. They'll be the majority. But what he's trying to say, and they just haven't found a way to say it yet, is that people who are members of minorities altogether become the majority. But the majority, which doesn't have minorities, well, this is ridiculous, isn't it? But it's true. This is but in this ever-changing, in this world that's changing right now, and again, this all becomes a topic because, like, from the beginning of time, from the time I started the show, if it had only one theme, it was that, you know, we're all going down the Hallelujah Trail. This digital revolution, the new generations, the extra millenniums and the new millennials, all these, things are changing so rapidly. And they're changing at such biblical proportions, actually anti-biblical proportions, so that things are, you know, never going to be the same, which is certainly not good for people who are conservatives or people who feel they want to go back and do things. They said, we know too much now, you know. But the point I'm trying to make here is that we're headed in this particular direction, no matter what happens, no matter what we do, and the new generation doesn't care about all this other stuff. This is a moot fight. I guess what I'm saying is that along the way, you know, before Obama was, you know, all the stuff that went on before. I made a wager with a friend of mine who is a staunch conservative, and through the campaign kept saying, here's, you know, Romney, and he's a little older than me, but it's Romney this and Romney that, and Obama's bad, and all this stuff, okay, because he's a staunch conservative. Mm-hmm. And I said, and I think Vince Bugliosi would probably say that this was good for me to do, I said to him, look, it doesn't matter, let's not even talk about policy, let's not even talk about left and right and right and left. Here's the point. The point is that there aren't enough regular white people anymore to put him in. It's just not enough. The whole thing is just, I don't know what that thing is going on. But if everybody who is conscious of the changes and the way life is changing and the culture is changing in this country, if they go out to vote, he doesn't have a chance. And that's why at all the big money, I told them this too well before, so all the big money and in the on the big web betting sites where they have where you can bet on all, you know, anything, you can bet on anything. And Obama was ahead and just kept getting further and further ahead, while guys like who was that guy their predictions were like, oh, it's Romney and landslide. There's no doubt, you know, these guys don't even know what to do anymore with their lives. They refuse to look at what is happening, this wave of stuff. So I think a lot of the stuff that even Bugliosi is talking, because obviously I won the bet because it was like, you got to be crazy. I mean,
they're talking about the, you know, believing what isn't real. The Romney people, Romney himself, Karl Rove,
they
still thought he was going to win.
They made up their own reality, and therefore overlooked what is reality, because they're so bent on beliefs, they're so bent on, you know, on their politics, their lives, their lifestyles, or whatever. I don't know whatever it is they do, but you see what's happening now. And you saw what happened in that election. That's why he was elected, and anybody who would have been in Obama's place would have been elected. I personally think it's pretty much over for those guys. We're really headed towards And there's always going to be, okay, so Obama signed a thing with the Monsanto, but who knows all the other details? Who knows why he had to give that up in order to do this and this to do that? There's nothing transparent, no matter what he says. There's nothing transparent about government, you know, and all this stuff that that's happening. It really leaves us, I mean, it leaves me with a little bit of hope, but, you know, how much hope, what else can I do? What else can any of us do, Tom? What can we do?
I don't know.
And you know what? It's
I really don't.
It's really not that bad to sit back and because it's taken on a life of its own, and you should be happy if you're anywhere near liberal, because it's going your way either. And I'm, you know, I never got any federal assistance. I mean, for all that they were screaming about, you know, Obama gives away cell phones and he gives away all this stuff. You know, Obama's a gift. And that's what, you know, Rush, when he won, Rush Limbaugh said, called him Santa Claus. He said, well, he won because he said he was going to give everything away. And, you know, he's going to give everybody everything. You know, and I'm going like, you know, this country's giving you $14 million a year. I got nothing. I can't even get the government to pay for my oil. No matter, I mean, I'm like, you know, there, it's nuts. And so the NSA is listening. You know what I do? Here's how I counteract all this stuff. I do it. I know people don't do it. Now that I know they're listening, I address them. And I'll speak a little louder. I'll say, "Hey guys listening here, you know, I'll talk a little louder. I'll tweet a little more. And I'll make sure they know. Maybe they want to give me an email. I'll send it right to them." It's like, why should I even care anymore what they... I know that I am not... plotting, dealing with terrorists.
Yeah.
So why do I care what they're listening to?
I haven't been so upset by this whole thing. Well, first of all, this is the same policy as 2006.
Mm-hmm.
It's really nothing changed.
Yeah, but this idea of privacy, it's like this idea of like, I've got to protect my privacy. And that in itself is like, I don't even understand that. I don't understand. What? Why?
Yeah, I know. I feel the same way. It's
and in this day and age,
privacy is dead, even without the NSA. I mean,
yes. And in this day and age, what am I? You know what? I might want to have a gay relationship. I want to keep that private. Well, they try to keep it private, but you know, it doesn't even mean that much if you do anymore. In Shakespeare's day, if a man was caught doing something sexually to another man, they sent him to jail, they cut his head off, they put it on the London Bridge, and this was a monarchy, but still a democracy, right? I mean, that's what they did, what they believed is what you should believe or else. Okay,
right.
That's not happening here, and it's not going to happen here. And you lose a little bit of your privacy, and you're not a criminal. Then what? Why are they worried? We're going to tell you something against you. Like there's a bunch of people who even freaking care about me enough to make a case and come after me. You see what I'm saying? There's people. Yeah. I don't get people. What is so important?
Well, you know, the Tea Party.
Yeah.
And that, there's a Rand Paul. He's a Tea Party person.
Oh, yeah, all those guys. They're so, I don't know what, I just don't, but, I don't get it.
You know, one thing, talking about illusion again, and if you're going to be in the Tea Party or if you know somebody in the Tea Party, you should at least realize that the billionaire Koch brothers, each a billionaire, funded that. It's their idea.
Mm-hmm.
They planted all those ideas that you believe, they funded it and planted it for their purpose. So, I mean, if you want to be a Tea Party, you should at least know that.
See, but they don't care about that either. What they care about is that these guys are defending their rights and their great American, not anti, I don't know what they, I don't know what, the, but they're, what they're saying is that's okay. They're not looking at, they're just looking at the whatever these values are, which are created. They create these values. You know, it's like, you know, we never talk about our forefathers. We talk about our forefathers as these great people who go out and do what they got to do and did what they had to do. But we don't talk about them raping their slaves, grabbing their, you know. And the other day, a friend of mine and I were talking and we're saying, how do we know? Now, we know that they did, the guys, I mean, the Alexander, those guys had slaves and they were allowed to sexually molest the slaves. And some of them had children, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Not, okay, so that was the way of the land, and that's the way it went. And the thing was, like, we were talking, it's like, how do we know they didn't do anything homosexually? Just because we don't know. Maybe they did.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
Alexander Hamilton said, today, I like Cletus, that little black guy in the back there. And I, right, how do we know? But yet, that would
hey, let
be.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Since you're a Pennsylvania person. There. Oh. Am I
live? No, it's all right. I'm here. No, even though I'm a Canadian, but
you're Canadian.
No, I'm not. I'm a Pennsylvanian, but it's
yeah,
okay. You know it. I'm an American. Everybody knows I'm an American, eh?
But I've heard this stuff recently about findings about Ben Franklin, about finding bodies under the house where his house.
Just.
Children's bodies, dead bodies.
I don't know about that, but you know why should it bother us to think? You know, when Ben Franklin went to Paris, he had the sexual time of anybody's life. He was, and that's like they just didn't write about it, didn't put it out there, you know.
Yeah.
But the guy was like he was really into it, and
yeah, that would have been great tweet.
So who's to say the guy didn't? That's the other thing. See, because everybody knows everything now. But who's to say he didn't do something considered untoward at the time, or something homosexual at the time? Okay, who's to say? And if he did now, what would it matter?
Yeah.
See, but yeah, it would matter to those. See, they would say lies. See, because there are fixed thoughts. You know this too, because we went through all the Alan Watts stuff and all the Zen Buddhist stuff. It's like fixed thoughts make no sense. I mean, right? Fixed thoughts. So they're not going to believe it because it interferes with what they believe about the good side of a person. As if a person who is good can't have a little bad in them.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's no mixture. To them, it's black and white.
It's funny you bring that up because everybody at my school knows that I'm starting my last year. And actually, most of them thought that this past year was my last year. And it was going to be, but circumstances prevented this June from being my last June. So I got one more year. And now people are addressing me and writing emails and saying, exalting me, it's kind of has the air of an obituary. You notice that in an obituary, they never say anything bad about somebody.
I know, I know. We always joke about that stuff. No matter who
and
dies.
As with, like you're approaching retirement, you come into like an obituary mode where it's like, well, we're only going to say good things about them, and we're not going to criticize them, and you know.
Well, it's not really necessary to say the bad things, but I think, but denial is what you're talking about. Denial is what goes on with fixed, when you got fixed beliefs.
Yeah.
It's denial.
Yeah.
And it's not to say, so if someone says, you know, he liked young boys, Ben Franklin. And someone else goes, get out of here, that not Ben Franklin. Well, he was a man of moral, immediately you're going to say he was this kind of guy because you want him to be that kind of guy. If he's any mixture of any kind of guy, in other words, if he's human, hello, then horrible. Look at what Hollywood did to Rock Hudson. I mean, we don't want this guy as an image. They support the image. We've got to keep that image out there.
Yeah.
And I've told this story 100 times, and I talked with the guy who suffered for it, Rory Calhoun. Do you remember Rory Calhoun?
Yes, yeah.
Rory Calhoun, the studios, when it was learned that Rock Hudson, bear with me, you people who've heard this before, when it was learned that reporters said, hey, this guy's having gigantic gay parties in the backyard. He's apparently, he's apparently homosexual. And that was going to be a big thing, you know, and that was going to ruin all the people at the, they thought it would ruin their image, the studios. And they said, like, well, we got to do something. So they said, How about we give you something else, another super sensational story? And they went, and then where you stop, you don't say anything about rock. And they went, well, like what? They said, well, we got this guy we're grooming, and it was Rory Calhoun.
Mm-hmm.
And I got first person on this because I worked with Rory Calhoun on a movie. Mm. And they said he was involved in it was suspicion of murder. He went to jail. They told all these things that he had in his past. And believe me, they were minuscule compared to what jail and murder and thievery was. Nothing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they said, we'll give you him. And they did. And they said, and all these affairs that he's had and all these people that he's screwed and all the, so they gave the press all of that to save Rock Hudson. And what they did was they ruined, cause he was actually in like big movies and they were grooming him to be like a major leading man. And he wound up sitting on, this is how bad it got. He wound up sitting on a set with me. Doing a movie called Motel Hell. Okay, that's how bad it got. The guy,
oh, man.
They ruined his life. They ruined it. They took over his future and ruined it for the sake of someone else. Why did I bring that up? Because today, why would it matter? Eddie Murphy picks up a transsexual hooker and is dry, and so what?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and I heard, you'd hear all sorts of rumors and I would even believe them in Hollywood. There were things that we could believe. Why would you not believe them? Remember Rob Lowe? Was it Rob Lowe? Is that his name?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The threesome or something.
Yeah,
well,
he made a videotape of him and two girls. Meanwhile, people are out buying porn. It's like, but Rob Lowe made a, what is he, sick? I don't know. I mean, what? I don't know where.
And he was just ahead of his time.
Yeah, where does any of this stuff, where does it end and where does it begin and why do we believe what we believe? It's just crazy.
Yeah, the other day I saw a Kinescope interview with Edward R. Murrow. Edward R. Murrow did this show for a while to appease the executives at CBS or where, I think it was CBS.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah. What was the name of that movie? He was a great movie with that about freedom of speech and press. What was the name of that movie?
The one with that
guy.
George Clooney in it?
Yes. Yeah. But anyway, go ahead. So,
good night,
Edward R. Murrow.
How did he sign off?
Oh, that's right. Yes. Good night. Good luck. Goodbye or something. Yeah. Good night and good luck.
Good night and good luck.
Yeah. Good night and good luck.
It's a good movie. Yeah.
It was a very good movie.
But in order to, he lived really to, according to this movie anyway, his big purpose was to knock down Joseph McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
But he agreed to take on these dumb interview shows so that he could take down McCarthy. Mm-hmm. It was like a trade off, you know. And he's interviewing Liberace, and he says, "Is there going to be a Mrs. Liberace?"
Did you see the Liberace made-for-TV movie?
I didn't see it. I was so I was so turned off by the idea.
No, I saw it. I had to watch it because it's hilarious that there was a time. Now they're making a movie, which tells you so. He did everything he possibly could to make sure that people did not think he was gay, except completely act gay, dress gay, and perform gay, and have a gay guy that he lived, and a guy, and it's not madness, absolute madness, the image that he wanted, and people believed that.
Yeah, that's what reminded me, that the Edward R. Murrow said, so is there a Mrs. Liberace in the future?
He actually wrote an autobiography, and he talks about the loves of his life, and they're all women. He lied in his autobiography, because that's what I'm saying about, you know, I mean, times change and things change. Now it's not a big deal. I mean, Liberace's all over the place. Well, there's Elton John.
Yeah.
We're not hanging him from any crosses. It's madness. But yeah, but Edward R. Murrow, and I'll tell you something else about Edward R. Murrow. He smoked two cartons of cigarettes a day.
Two cartons?
Two cartons today. Could you imagine today First of all, he'd have to have.
He'd have to have a high paying job.
First of all, he had a special made ashtray so he could smoke in the shower.
Oh, come on.
Yes, he would stick his head out. Oh. He had the ashtray was outside and mounted atop the, and he would keep the cigarette in there and stick his head out, take puffs, and go back into the shower. He always smoked. Always.
Well, yeah, you'd probably have to wake up after, you know, not even sleep 8 hours, just to, 2 cartons of cigarettes.
Yeah, and he killed him. Yeah. But today, all you gotta do is look at these changes. Look at how do we watch Leave It to Beaver now? How do we watch this American family? I mean, even movies mock, the contemporary art shows how much nonsense all that stuff was. And once all that stuff is out, there's no turn. Is there any turning back? That's what I mean. There's no turning back. Screw the Constitution. You're going to take that seriously now and look at it and say, hey, look, they were supposed to do this and this and this based on these guys that we don't know. For all we know, they were out doing the little boys, black boys in the back too. We don't know. But hey, but they had, their words were great. And we have to go back to that time when Ronald Reagan all that stuff. It's like, that, it can't happen anymore. Everything, there's no more closet.
No, everything's out.
So,
all out.
Yeah, it's all out there. If it's all out there, and the generations that is growing into adulthood doesn't even have the experience, the analog, let's just call it, the analog experience. It's done.
Mm.
They don't talk the same. We don't communicate. The communications are different. Culture is different. Everything. It's just the way it happens right now. I can't, I refuse to argue with people anymore, even about music. It's ridiculous. Why? When we were kids, we had great music and they had great songs. And these guys were like, I tell them, and I've even done that on the show too. And I said, yeah. I said, and at Woodstock, and believe me, because I was there, at Woodstock, all those great men and women up there who were singing about freedom, love, they were going back to their trailers where they had cool beverages, wonderful drinks, and a great paycheck waiting. And they're going, were just a capitalist, right? Meanwhile, I'm walking through how many feet of mud to get a drink of water? Screw that generation. This is ridiculous. Yeah. What about?
I like Grace Slick is pretty honest and frank about that, about that whole era. We weren't protesting against the war. We just didn't want to go.
Yeah, it was just one big trip.
We just wanted to get high.
It was just a big trip. And people today who, and so the thing about music is like, here's my point. That music was, you said it was better. You're making a judgment upon that music. Well, let me tell you something. The minute any of those, and you know this too, because it happened to all the groups, the minute that music stopped selling, they kicked the group out or they disbanded. It was all about the money anyway. It just so happened that all that stuff was in vogue. So we could do it.
Yeah.
Can't do it today.
Yeah.
Today, one of those artists, they have to go to, Starbucks. Paul McCartney went to Starbucks to release an album. I mean, give me a break. Nobody.
I saw him last night on the Colbert Report.
Yeah, I saw part of that. Yeah, but they're old. They're old. I don't know why they're even walking around doing this stuff. It's over. And we have this phrase that we always do around here. It comes from the Rambo movies. It's Richard. Boy, I'm bad on names. What was his name? The guy who knew Rambo, who always came and helped Rambo, the actor. Richard. It was Richard something. Anyway, he was a colonel. Remember the Rambo movies?
Yeah.
The colonel, he was a general, he was one of the, he was a Green Beret or something like, but he goes, and Johnny's always fighting. Johnny Rambo is like, fight, I'm gonna get him, cause he's still in the war, first blood, right? And this guy is just constantly walking and going, it's over, Johnny. It's over, Johnny. It's over, Johnny. And it's like, we get this phrase whenever anybody gets too excited about something, about that, we just go, it's over, Johnny.
It's over, Johnny.
It's over, Johnny. It's like it's done. And maybe, so there's a lot of the fight. A lot of the people are raising their blood pressures and doing what they got to do and getting crazy.
Well,
nuts over this stuff.
To come back to the Bugliosi thing.
Yeah.
That's,
he's making his living this way. That's what he's doing. So, God bless him.
Said recently, somebody asked him, you know, about what is your decision, the 2000 election, you know, how do you feel about that? And he said, you know, I totally defended it. And you know what? Get over it.
It's like, it's over, Johnny.
Yeah. It's over, like, Johnny. Just get over it.
Yeah.
But it's easy for him to say. He's the criminal, you know.
Yeah, but he got away with it. Yeah, but he got away with it. If he is a criminal, he got away with it. Nobody's going to go back and get him. And when push comes to shove, you know, he'll be 6 feet underground too. Is it still 6 feet? Or is it 10 feet or 12 feet? I don't even know. I question everything.
You know what it really concerns me, above and beyond all of this, things, are asteroids. Asteroids are really frightening because... You know what gets me? About 6 months ago, there was an one that exploded in Russia.
Yeah, that little guy. Yeah, little guy came in.
And what bothers me is that asteroid that exploded in Russia happened the same day. This is according to NASA. It happened the same day that they had predicted a close encounter with another asteroid.
Yeah.
And I said, well, wait a minute. That asteroid that hit Russia wasn't the one that you had been predicting for months was going to...
No, it wasn't. Close? It was a little piece of us.
Said, no. Did it come off the asteroid instead? No, it was a totally separate thing. So you're saying that two asteroids came close to the Earth, one so close that it exploded in Russia? Yes. This doesn't bode well.
No, but you know, I the other day I saw that, you know, there's this gigantic program where they actually have this they have this big thing that is going to grab an asteroid if it gets too close and suck it up or something. They got a big machine. No, they're working on this stuff and they're not letting it alone. Now we could see them. Think of all the thousands of years, millions of years we couldn't see these things and they still missed us.
Yeah. There's one this week, right? That it's not that close as the one 6 months ago. This one is out. It's beyond the moon orbit, but it's so big it has its own moon.
I saw that one. Yeah, that one's gone. That was that one left.
It was a couple of days ago.
Yeah, it just went past us. So you see now here's what I want to say now as we get closer to the end, because I'm going to choose the next topic. And this is really from the sublime to the ridiculous, okay? In July, when you come back in July, July is the opening, and I've already done an entire show on how Johnny Depp has recreated Tonto for the new movie, The Lone Ranger, and I went back and talked about Jay Silverheels and everything and all sorts of stuff. And Tonto, we played music, we did the whole Lone Ranger. Well, anyway, the movie's coming out. In July. So we were way ahead of looking at that. But what I want to do is I want your next appearance on here and me that we ought to do to completely devote it to Tonto jokes.
Tonto jokes.
Something, and maybe we could get people to be thinking, because it's actually a great exercise to get people to understand Tonto jokes. And maybe do them, and it's a lot of fun. So we could talk about that. So if you're okay with that, that's what we'll do in July.
No, that sounds great.
We'll do that in July. We'll do the Tonto jokes. And by the way, the other day, the Washington Redskins are going to change their name because Native American groups have said that using the term redskin is indeed derogatory.
Is this a joke for real?
No, that's true. That is true. They're gonna do that. They're changing their names because of all the pressure they're getting. So they talked with one of the top Native American spokesmen, and he said, me think I'm that good stereotypical Indian. I can't even get through that joke without laughing. me like them new name of... You know, I'm all for making fun of anything. So, you know, our Native American, if anybody listens isn't their Native American, they're laughing now anyway. But we want to say that too, because the Tonto jokes are all going to be completely stereotypical.
Okay.
And I've already done that, and we've not gotten, like I said, when we talked about Tonto, Tonto, what did they do on Saturday Night Live? But it was Tonto, Frankenstein's monster, and Tarzan, who don't use pronouns or...
I didn't see that.
No, it's like those three characters.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, those three characters talk like Tarzan say, do when I go, you know, and Tonto go, look out, take the, it's a pronoun they're not using? What don't they use?
Yes.
Yeah, pronouns. And Frankenstein goes, fire, good, not fire is good.
Fire is good, yeah.
Fire. So, anyway, the book, and we're not selling the book. We didn't do this here today, friends, to sell this book. But if you like this kind of stuff, the book is called The Betrayal of America.
Yes.
I also think that if you're at all interested in, I still find the Helter Skelter thing a lot more fascinating because of the law. If you want to know about law, because this guy, I mean, to be able to come up with a case against Charles Manson, because everyone, that book, Helter Skelter, is wonderful. And I think you could even go to Netflix and get the movie. I forgot who played him. Who played him?
Who played Buglioso?
Yeah, you'd know the guy, too. You'd know the actor if you saw him. The names are just all gone. Is that age? Or is that
Yes, it no, it's, is. It's, the book I have here is actually signed by Vincent Buglioso. And that's, what would we got? A few minutes?
Yeah, here?
I just want to wrap
minutes,
up
yeah.
that.
Wrap it up.
When this came, when this book came out, hold on a second.
Yeah.
When this book came out, I went to see him talk at Barnes & Noble.
And he moved his lips.
And he did.
To see him talk.
He moved his lips. I went to see him.
I want to see you talk. I don't know if it's your voice at all.
I hear him talk.
Okay.
At the Barnes & Noble. And I really believe that this whole election thing and what happened with the Supreme Court was the beginning of this divisiveness that we see. At that time, when Buglioso was talking to the people who came to see and hear him talk, there were a family was sitting there who obviously were not in line with the what he was saying. And I could see them reacting to what he was saying. And they're just looking at each other like, oh, my God, these liberal bastards, look at them, what they're doing. They can't, you know. I really think that that election was the beginning of
the
divisiveness
new wave.
We see today. And
the new wave of...
And maybe the asteroid will change this all.
I think it's already changing. I guess that would be my point. I'm not spreading out any false hope or anything like that. But I think the election of Obama said an awful lot about what's going on in this country and with the generation that is going to be in power, whether you like it or not. We're going down the Hallelujah Trail. That's it. There's no way. Even grandmas do emails now and have smartphones.
Yeah.
There's no more. That's it. Grandmas aren't even grandmas. You and I are not our age as we remember our age. Everything has changed.
Yeah.
You know?
It sure has.
Except for Bob Hope and Bing Crosby of Alternative Broadcasting, Tom Savino and Frank Atolo, who have been here. Thanks again, Tom. And
You're welcome.
It was a stuttering whoosh.
It was a stuttering whoosh. Maybe not as funny as usual, but the next time
it's okay. We're going to do Tonto jokes. It's going to be terrific. They're going to everyone's going to absolutely love it.
Look forward to it.
Yes, we will. We'll be doing that soon. Well, we'll figure it out.
That's Scatola over there.
And,
you know what I mean?
And Savino over there. We'll be doing that. So thanks a bunch again for being here. Stay well and stay in touch. Tom, are you there?
Hi, everybody.
Yeah. Okay. Bye. So stay well. Stay in touch. And but don't forget, Canadian Mountie is your friend. And you see him on the street and you're in trouble. And Tom, wherever you go, that's where you are. He said it there too. Okay. And it's me, Frank Atolo, man whose name adorns the title of the show. Thank you, everyone, for being here again. And this show is available on Facebook in a matter of minutes. And you can listen to all the stations that will be playing it all week. Go get books, read books, do things. And go to Rick Busby's Facebook page. And I don't know if you could be a friend or what have you. You could do now, but you could post something there too and say your goodbyes publicly. We do everything else on Facebook publicly. Why don't we do that too? And as for the rest of us, good night, Mrs. Ernstwhile, wherever you are. This is Tom Savino and Frank Attola saying, we'll see you soon. We're leaving now because we have nothing more to say.